Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to What Are You Doing Movie? Go ahead and pop in your DVD or Blu-ray of Attack the Block, press play, and press pause when the UK Film Council logo fades to black. At the first frame you perceive of all black,
bloody
press pause.
Film Council.
In a second, I'll say 3, 2, 1, unpause, at which point I'll press play, you'll press play, and watch the movie together in perfect sync. It'll be like any other commentary, except, of course, with four friends in your head. .com. Myself is always T. Christie, my friend Eddie the Eddie Doty.
Oh, hiya.
Michael Dorkman Scott.
Hello.
Trey the Amazing Stokes.
Oh, hello. How are you then?
So, Joe Cornish. What's up, bro? You can come sit at my table.
Yeah.
This was a fun little movie. When it came out, I had already been told to see it repeatedly by Drew McWeenie and other people that get to see movies before I do. And then it came out and all my friends said, oh, you got to see this. I didn't. In fact, I didn't see it until this week. Always knowing that I just need to watch this and I'll like it. And indeed, I did. I went to Blockbuster the other day to get both the movies we're doing today. And the guy looked at me like, good choices, bro. I'm like, thank God.
Thank you,
like,
thank
I'm
you.
Still, like, self-flagellating from that time I got surrogates at Fry's. Like, oh, just blame me. Call me a bad person. Tell me I deserve it. Ugh.
Spank me.
Yeah. I had to rent Terminator 3 that one time.
So. Oh, don't you feel unclean for, like, weeks?
The dude tried to stop me. I told you guys that.
Yeah.
He's like, don't.
Yeah,
don't.
He was like,
no,
dude,
it's
don't.
For,
it's,
not like this.
It's for a good cause,
not
dude.
Like this.
Not like this.
Anyway. But Attack the Block is a lot of fun. I can imagine how, without having heard of it at all and being surprised that it exists and learning for the first time that it exists while watching it, it would blow you away. It didn't blow me away. I found it to be kind of slight, but generally just a boatload of fun and super cool, and I loved it. And it made me retroactively excited for the now debunked rumor that Joe Cornish was going to be involved in Star Wars 7, because now I'm like, I kind of trust Joe Cornish. And the other day I was watching this with Eddie, and we're trying to call out, like, we're trying to figure out what the, like, Die Hard in a blank sort of pitch for this is. It's like, it's Super 8 in Home Alone with Monster Squad. No, it's, and we're just
and Trainspotting.
And Trainspotting. Yeah, exactly. And it's wholly its own movie while simultaneously being a lot of other ones, and it just does it well without being like a genre savvy sort of Shaun of the Dead thing. It's just its own good throwbacky action movie.
It's The Wire meets The Gray in a British skyscraper.
And The Mist. The Mist.
And The Mist.
Some Dread and Mega City 1 with, I don't know. Anyway, yeah. But I really liked Attack the Block a lot. I heard online that a lot of people had trouble understanding them.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't so much, but then again, I also don't know how much I did understand. And
it also doesn't matter.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's context clues. And
which means it's great visual storytelling.
Exactly.
You get
yeah,
what's
exactly.
Going on just
but we're, we always watch movies with subtitles on, and this will probably be the first time that I catch most of the dialogue. Eddie?
Yeah, yeah.
That still doesn't mean you'll understand
I love foreign. I love watching foreign films.
You don't understand it, but it's like, I mean, even if you don't understand the words, the performances are such to where you're never really at a loss for what the characters are thinking or feeling. Like yeah. they
in the chat, one of our Scottish guys is like, I have trouble understanding
that. Yeah.
There's, I mean, and even if you understand what the words are saying, you're trying to figure out the context. But again, it doesn't matter. Man, I really just fucking love this movie. I was a big fan. There was on Twitter the other day, Devin Ferrassi made, oh God, the most depressingly insightful comment, which is Back to the Future. If it couldn't just be him doing that, he would have to save the world. Like nowadays,
it's a small little story.
Yeah, movie making. It's like if he's traveling back in time, he has to save the world. It's the it's a story of gravity that Damon Lindelof identified and is a sad participant of.
Marty would be the prophesied one who saves the world, but he goes back in time.
Yeah, exactly. And it's prophesied like for me, what was so refreshing about this movie is that it's an alien invasion movie, and the whole goal and point is to save a shitty council estate in South London.
Yeah,
and that. Is so, and not only does it, is that the premise, but at every moment you're fully invested. At no point do you not care. These are not, this inverts.
It makes an excellent point about how people think that the only way to attain stakes is with scope.
Right.
Yeah. Bad argument.
No, you attain stakes because you recognize that these kids, there is no like, there is no page 8 save the cat moment. I mean, they start off by committing a pretty shitty mugging, and they don't even like.
And then they beat a wild animal to death.
Yeah, and then and it's all it's
which,
all
but,
in service.
But then they reap the consequences.
That's the thing. It's all in service of a very simple lesson. And because we see this character making slow ebbs towards changes, we're invested. We don't need it to be about a volcano that you drop a bomb in, and therefore that undoes the time loop. And it doesn't. You don't need any of that because these characters are fully realized, and you care enough about them. And man, it works. And I love the unique character or the alien design to it. And it's for a really small budgeted sci-fi action movie. It completely works.
Michael Dorkman Scott.
Yeah, I think
I'll bet you this movie delighted you.
It did. It did. Not quite as much as Dread, but it does. It is in the same category where
it doesn't delight me as much as Dread.
Where,
but it's not so much Dread as delight.
It reminded me. It does remind me it's in kind of the same category for the same reason that you're saying. You know, what I loved about Dread was it's not about trying to save the world. It's about trying to get through this one shitty day.
I'm trying to get
it's
to dinner.
It's the same movie.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just a totally different same movie.
Yeah, but it's
just stuck in an apartment building.
I just want to get home and watch Breaking Bad. That's all I want. Yeah.
It is exactly the same energy, and I really enjoyed that about it. And I enjoyed the fact that it was an unusual choice of, it's an unusual choice of location. It's an unusual choice of a group of characters. You're doing you're spending time with the villains, you know, so to speak, and kind of learning more about them and how they, in some ways, how they got into that, you know, how they are in this situation and how they've embraced it and how they try to reject it and this, that, and the other. And it's got a lot of social commentary without getting really heavy about it or without being about that.
But it handles it deftly.
It handles it very well. Yeah. So it's very interesting to watch in that sense. And actually, it's also interesting because I saw in some of the behind the scenes, we talk about like the way they talk and the slang and stuff. I see in some of the behind the scenes where the kids are talking about it and they've never even seen that kind of slang before. So I'm like, did Joe Cornish make it up or did he go to these,
Expelliarmus.
You know, did he go to these neighborhoods where the actors obviously would not have been from and actually pick this up? Nobody knows except the people who live in neighborhoods like this, I guess. But it certainly makes the world feel very real. It feels like, I don't know, like you pointed out a couple of times, it's like, I feel like I'm getting older because I'm like, that's just how kids talk. Kids just make up fucking words now.
That's messed up.
And
stupid kids.
Language is descriptive, man, and whatever they say.
But I didn't have a problem. You know, I read a lot of fantasy and watch fantasy movies. I'm like, there's fucking made up words all the time in half the things I watch. So sure,
you can make it through Game of Thrones. You can handle Attack the Block.
Yeah, exactly.
By the way, this is the planet Korblog. This is not Earth, actually.
If you can read, if you've seen Attack the Block, you are now ready to try reading Anathem.
Yeah.
We also might have to rename this podcast. Look what you did, Joe Cornish.
Yeah.
Trey, what about you?
This one, I like this movie. This one for me suffered a little bit from the pre-hype that came with it, which didn't ultimately pay off in terms of box office, I don't think. But they were really trying to push this one as like the next Shaun of the Dead as it was getting ready to come out.
Yeah, and bad comparison.
It is produced by Edgar Wright, is it not?
Yeah, and Joe Cornish is the co-writer of a lot of
So to the point where they were kind of, you know, it
and
was
Nick
like
Frost is in it.
It was a la. It was a la. This is a bad comparison, but as like Red Tails, where I was stunned when I finally saw Red Tails and found out that George Lucas did not direct Red Tails, because there's another guy who actually directed Red Tails. They were talking about George Lucas the whole time. So I was like, for the longest time, I thought, oh, it's Edgar Wright's new movie, Attack the Block.
It's like Henry Selick in any movie.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like Guillermo del Toro. Like, wait, he didn't direct this one. He just, you know, produced it. So it's Edgar Wright produced, right?
Yeah.
But
he was one of like five producers.
Joe Cornish made it. And, you know, and you can certainly see why Edgar Wright would produce this guy's movies. And you know, obviously they have a similar sensibility. It's not like they have the same style or anything. Joe Cornish has his own thing going on. So it suffered a little bit from like, oh my God, it's the next Shaun of the Dead. It's the greatest thing ever. When I finally saw it, I saw it on video. I Redboxed it. I was like, okay, you know, all right, that was fun. You know, it's not, I wouldn't put it on the pedestal of Shaun of the Dead for me, which is still, you know, pretty
gold standard.
Gold standard. Yeah. And I have not seen World's End. And there are those who say yes and no.
I would say that also does not make it up to the pedestal.
I almost went last night to see World's End. I might go see it tonight. But
go check it out because we're going to want to do it.
Because it's playing down the
street. I loved it.
It's playing down the street.
Oh, we're definitely going to want to do an episode about
Mike
it.
Mike was not a big fan.
So I'm curious about it. I'm sure I'm pretty sure I'll enjoy that one just like I enjoyed this one. I think Dread is actually a really good comparison because, in more ways than one, because this too is another one that we've said many times. This is what a real B movie is. This is an actual B movie.
Yeah.
This is not the stupid Hollywood $100 million version of a B movie, which is what they make nowadays. This is an actual B movie. This is just a small story. I mean,
this is a couple of steps of production value up from being straight to video.
Yeah, it's a couple steps of production value up from being the original Blob with Steve McQueen, where a bunch of teenagers save the town from an alien menace from space. I mean, that's all it is. It's just that. And it just nails that. And, again, it's like, that's how you know it's an indie because they aren't saving the world. And, you know, it doesn't have all those things in it. And you can't understand a damn word they're saying. Do they have to talk in British? Can't they talk normal?
Well, and that was like the idea that they wanted to remake this because they were afraid.
Yeah. They almost did a US remake.
That's right. Just like the original, Mad Max is one dubbed into English.
One of the studios was like,
oh, yeah. That's true. If you didn't know that.
I didn't.
The original
That's
Mad
hysterical.
Max is dubbed into English for American amazing. Audiences from the original Australian.
One of the studios that's went, true. Hey, cool movie, bro. We should remake that where you can understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
For both movies.
Nice movie, yeah.
Anyway.
Movie. So, but I it is fun, and I'm impressed by the low-budget-ness tricks that they used, especially the character design. The alien design, I thought, was one of the most genius new ways to do a low-budget creature that I've seen in many a year.
See, at the point where the UK Film Council logo, I think, has faded to black, as we are here, put your finger on the button. 3, 2, 1, unpause.
I'm actually surprised by how much...
God damn it, I thought I got to all the logos, but there's still more.
There's 5 more production companies.
God damn, indie movies and there are 45 production companies.
I was surprised by, considering how low the budget is, I mean, low, it's what, 30, 40 million around there? I don't know.
That seems high.
There's a lot of visual effects were like all the creatures, they have the real creatures, which we'll talk about, you know, on set stuff to interact with, but most of the shots of the creatures are significantly enhanced as well.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And it's a lot of really impressive work. Because I didn't realize that. It's clearly got the energy of something that was there on the set. And the work that they did to enhance it is really quite seamless.
Yeah. It's funny because, like, hearing Trey kind of putting a bow on it, and he's absolutely right. It is all it is just.
It's 13 million was the budget.
Yeah, no, I knew it was small.
Whoa.
Yeah,
so. You can't buy a house in Los Angeles for 13 million.
Yeah,
yeah. I recognize that it's essentially quote just a B movie. But for me,
but those are awesome.
They're rare, and especially nowadays, we live in this age where they're exceedingly rare. To where when you do something like this, it feels so fresh. To where you forget that it's like, oh wow, there are movies like this and Dread, and the landscape is just not that. So when we have a Dread and this, it's like, aw.
Where does Pacific Rim go on that spectrum?
The comparison... The
Pacific Rim is a way too expensive B-movie.
Way too expensive.
The comparison to Blob...
It's robot jocks with $100 million too much money.
The comparison to Blob was really good. I haven't seen the original, but seeing the remake...
Yeah, yeah.
I had the same feeling watching this that I do watching that, where I'm like, this is so awesome because it's just so lo-fi and
a
so
movie
much
for me.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
In many ways, it kind of reminds me of The Crow, like just in the sense that The Crow was a perfectly serviceable fine.
Go check out The Crow movie, The Crow.
You know? But for me, this is slightly elevated because, and we'll get to it at the end of the movie, but it ultimately does have something to say in terms of, you know, an idea of what community is and should be, and you know, the lesson here is just talk to your neighbors, folks. Like, if,
there's just, always someone else to be afraid of.
I wish Neil Blomkamp had watched this a few more times before he made Elysium.
And what's funny is, I was thinking about District 9 when we were talking about the use of language in this movie, because not like it's, I don't know how much of the dialect and all the slang terms here are made up. Maybe none are, but in District 9, most of what they're doing is just straight up South African normal communication talk, but it feels so sort of like fully realized, and you almost want to give it the credit for being an invented language, even though it's not.
Right. Well,
but the use of language in both movies is similar.
The use of language as it applies to the prawns certainly dovetailed well with the real slang,
right?
You know, and with the real dialect.
Well, it's also just, I think it might be just an artifact of the fact that a lot of movies, most movies, we'll say almost all movies, take place with people who are from all different places. Not necessarily. It doesn't matter that they're all from the same block. In District 9, they're all from the same little part of Johannesburg. Here, they're all from the same little part of South London. And I like the idea of getting people with places where accents are a thing, you know, more so than most of America. And their accent is very specific, and they all have the exact same one. I love that. I love seeing that. Mostly because I think I just didn't grow up with it, and accents aren't as much of a thing here as they are elsewhere in the world.
Well, the thing is, and we're so used to seeing people talk like us, talk like the West Coast American, because most of the media was made here, so everybody talks like that because in movies, because
and all the frogs around the world are trying to emulate our frogs.
Well, and celebrated.
So this is like we become movie English, but that's not really the way most people talk.
The Valley is what movie neighborhood looks like.
I mean, and how many, like, you know, when I go back to visit my wife's neighborhood in Buffalo, so many people speak like Valley girls, and I'm like, oh, because you watch the fucking TV shows that I made here. And, you know, celebrated screenwriters tend to be like, when somebody gets praised, like, oh, they've really captured the ear of this. Well, it's like, yeah, they're from Minnesota or whatever.
Yeah.
And like, they're just remembering how different people speak.
No, go on though. You're making a good point there.
Yeah.
No, that's
but that's exactly it. You know, you watch a movie like Fargo, and it's almost as the same as this. Like, that's how they all talk out there. It sounds funny to us, but that's how they talk.
Zarban got it. Thank you, Zarban. I'll see that in the comment on Zarban.com.
Yeah.
My frog joke. Anyway, moving on. So, is your first instinct after seeing something hit a car to A, go into it? And is your first instinct after being attacked in the face to B, go running after it?
I think adolescent, pre-adolescent kids, yes. I mean,
tough guy kids.
Like, I mean,
he just got embarrassed in front of his boys. Yeah.
He's clearly the alpha of the group. So it's like he needs to go do it. I think it also, we should clarify now up front, the phrase block in terms of this film, they're not referring to a city block. They're referring specifically to the building, the Council State building. That's when they say
Mega City
block.
One.
Yeah, it's essentially Mega City One. But if you've ever actually been to London and seen an actual Council Estate, they are like that. They're just these sort of depressing,
is it
skull
like
crushing
a tenement building. Is that sort of the same
it's
thing?
It's kind of like a, yeah, it's like
it's
a nicer project.
It's public housing.
It's publicly financed housing. And that's why the lights, and what a great framing device that we'll get to.
Yeah, explain the lights thing. I didn't get the lights thing.
It's power saving. It's to keep the electricity
bill
down.
You turn on the lights when you go into the hallway.
Yeah.
So not
if you're in the hallway, you turn the power on, and then if you forget to turn it off, it goes down on its own.
Huh. I didn't know that when I watched it, but that's a cool thing.
My 2002, I was in East London filming I was doing second unit on a documentary, and our producer was born and raised there. And so we stayed in his home in the East End, which is a bit different from South London, but their accents aren't quite like this, but their accents were such to where fuck, anything's possible. So
it's like being on a film set. Just like stuff you don't know what they're saying all the time.
I remember watching this and just being just right out of the gate being kind of fascinated by this, because you would think the movie just sitting there kind of knowing these kinds of movies, it's like, okay, the alien comes down and then they're gonna deal with it, and then the first thing they do is beat it to death.
Yeah,
and I'm like,
that was easy.
Now I don't know what's gonna happen next in this movie. Like it was a nice little signal to go, okay, pay attention, because you may not. You're not going to be two steps ahead like you often are in genre movies these days.
I like how later they
call Lord of the Flies, right?
Yeah, later they sort of explain away why this alien looks different than the aliens for the rest of the movie. You know, this is a lady; the rest of them are all dudes. But it is weird, like the level of difference between them is sort of odd for me. Like I've seen, you know, I know anglerfish and shit. Yeah. Like it's way different all the time, but. You know, that was an interesting thingy. That's a beautiful shot. Good job.
And what a great way
guys.
To get into title reveal here.
Yeah.
And also a great way to go, oh shit, stakes.
Yeah. Oh god.
Oh.
You know, it's
a fucking honey badger fell out of the sky. Here's 30 more.
Yeah.
It's something I keep going back to. One of my professors said, like, you know, your first 8 minutes should say, this is the ride. This is what you're in store for. And ideally, by the time titles
and we
come
literally
up,
just hit eight.
Right.
Just
and
you said
and
that.
That's, and the two best examples I know of this are Officer and a Gentleman and Step Brothers. By the time titles come up on both of those movies, you know exactly what the fuck you're in for.
Well, and the Remy and Blake Snyder, you know, the first 10 pages.
Right. Yeah.
Same idea.
Yeah. I haven't seen Step Brothers.
It's like if you haven't established something that people can go, oh, okay, I know what I'm watching. You know, in the first 10 pages, you're in trouble.
Now, something that I read on the wiki, I didn't have I got the DVD from Blockbuster. No special features. Is that a thing that they're doing now?
Yes.
That's a bummer.
Rental.
They want you to buy it.
They make, yeah, it pretty much.
Yeah,
to
including the Star Trek Into Darkness thing, but
yeah,
whatever.
They make rental. Well, that's another one.
Oh, let's not even get started on that.
We'll do an intermission on that.
But anyway, but I read on the wiki that Cornish was talking about how he wanted to explain the geography of this in the way that you should. You know, I guess it's basically a geographical footprint in the snow. Like, here's the area. Got it? Cool. Moving on. This is what it's like. Got it? Moving on. And he starts by basically panning down to show you the map from above the block to tell you that. And it says Wyndham Tower. My instinct would have been to call it Wyndham Block. Just to clarify it for the idiots like me.
But something like Wyndham, they wouldn't call it that in the...
Yeah,
in
I guess that's fair, but I didn't get the sense...
They tried to make it sound like I guess fancy. They call them council estates.
Well, the reason they said
like that,
tower is probably because unless they said tower, you wouldn't know that wasn't just a flat building, that was the tower. But I thought when they were saying
this is a British movie. You know, they don't have to explain this to British people.
Oh, no, I know that. I know that. But when you see that image, you're not just seeing the tower itself. You're seeing all the buildings around it on the city block. So when it pans down to that, I think they're talking about the city block until Eddie explains it to me. Not that it matters. It's all the same movie.
And yeah, I don't think it suffers at all for
And I'm
that.
Not sure that the... I don't know if the geography is really that big a deal because all the hallways kind of look the same and it doesn't really matter.
They do spend a lot of time out of the block.
Right. That is true. That's true. They do spend time outdoors, but it's all
Jenny.
In and around that area.
And it becomes a plot device and towards the middle, they're like, we gotta get back to the block. You know, that's
the sequel should be attack Jenny from the block.
Oh dear.
Please.
Please, please, please.
Yeah, there you go. The sequel, this has been a big hit. The sequel would have had Jennifer Lopez in it and had like $75 million budget and been terrible.
I like the I enjoy the choice of music because it's appropriate for the
Basement Jacks, son.
And stuff.
Is it Basement Jacks?
Where's your head at? Where's your head at?
Thank you for that.
You're welcome. I can do it again.
Is it?
I got time.
Is it Basement Jacks in the soundtrack?
It's Basement Jacks.
Oh wow. Okay.
There's a couple original songs that they picked from like a song. But the score is Basement Jacks. Yeah, or at least two of the guys from Basement Jacks.
I did recognize a Dizzy Rascal song, and I think there's somebody else in there, too. And they sing a Fugee song, like, halfway through.
Yeah, which is really cool. I love that beat.
For even what I like about this is that Cornish gets, like, the characterizations right to where, minus the dialogue and the aliens strapped to one of them, it's just a very believable interaction between... Yeah. 14, 15-year-old girls and boys.
Yeah.
You know, and you sort of have that sort of playfulness and that dynamic there.
Most of the actors, I think, are doing a really good job. But what's crazy is they're all kids. So A for effort. Good job. But what's really crazy is
a lot of them haven't done anything before.
Yeah, they got drama students from South London. That's where they were going from. But my favorite thing is these two kids, the young ones, the ones that are like 9 or 10, I think they're outstanding. Yeah. The white kid in particular is amazing.
Probs? Yeah.
Probs. It's Probs and Mayhem.
Yeah. He reminds me of Simon Pegg. He's like a tiny Simon Pegg.
I have an idea for a movie.
Yeah.
Well, no, I don't, but I have an idea for what to start with.
Young Simon Pegg Adventures.
it could be like Indiana Jones.
Well, just like the lead kid is, he's going to grow up and be Denzel Washington, clearly.
Yeah.
He totally looks like
Moses
Denzel.
Is good. Moses does a good job. I like, the older, the normal, age, what are we, how the 15-ish year old white kid gets a lot of screen time, and I think it does a pretty good job. It doesn't like knock it out of the park for me, but most of these kids all do like tremendously well considering all the performances we've seen from kids in the history. That this is a movie almost comprised entirely of kids and they're all really good is high five Joe Cornish.
I don't know if I ever shared this story or not, but since I got referenced earlier, Lord of the Flies, I actually went to high school with Dan Pipley, who played Piggy in Lord of the Flies.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Oh, shit.
And,
is he over that yet?
The remake of Lord of the Flies.
Really? Yeah. He and I are friends on Facebook, and, you know, I mean, he's a good guy. He's a good guy, but there's not a lot of daylight between Piggy and the character of Piggy and Dan Pipley, the person.
Is that along the lines of like what I imagine Jake Lloyd went through in high school sort of deal? Or is it a Lord of the Flies specific thing?
I mean, you know, and he was in drama with us, and there were a few fake rocks thrown at his head.
Fucking kids.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, I'm not.
At least they were fake.
Exactly. Yeah. Because I'm sure, because he was like 10 when he did that movie.
Fatalist
yeah.
Scott
I'm,
over here.
I'm sure, like,
what's he
real
about?
Ones got thrown in.
Not real rocks.
No, but I mean, he's a good guy. I mean, and, you know, it's, but yeah, there was a. It was one of those things where he tried. I remember he got new headshots done when he was in high school. We were all in Romeo and Juliet together. And his head, you know how like some headshots are broken into different costume setups?
Yeah.
Like essentially Dr. Tobias Funke, like his from
like
Resident
like Evil. Four quadrant thing.
He had like a five quadrant or like a six quadrant. It was like as radically different because he was just trying so hard to like break free of that. So of that Piggy stereotype.
This girl.
What about her?
I like this girl.
No, is she a communist? Is she a moral surgeon?
This girl.
The British Felicia Day.
She's kind of a mix between Felicia Day and
a girl
I know. Yeah.
There you go.
And that girl.
And I like
and that guy.
I enjoy Bruce.
I like how
yeah, me too.
It's a subtle effect work, but I like how the more dead the alien is, like you can see it sort of decompose over time. Like it's going through its own sort of natural state of rictus. Yeah. I kinda dig that.
Smells like a shit did a shit.
I didn't laugh much in this movie. I smiled a lot. I was smiling almost constantly, but I only got one laugh, and it was something that Nick Frost said. After Moses leaves, he's like, he's really kind of a sweet guy, isn't he? And it's just like, Nick Frost, you're good at this.
There's a nice little visual gag coming up, too, that got a healthy little chuckle.
Which one?
You'll see it.
Oh, I'll wait.
The one that little get a little chuckle.
Yeah.
I like Nick Frost. He's for a guy who isn't an actor.
Yeah, exactly.
He does pretty well.
Yeah, he really
does.
He does
pretty well.
He was recently interviewed on a local LA radio station here, and they were talking about how he became involved. And
he was a waiter at a restaurant that Nick Summer Peg used to go to.
Yeah, and so they're like, well, you can continue being a waiter, or you can. He's like,
would you like to be a movie star?
I much fancy doing this. He's like, because I figured if it didn't work out, I could just go back to being a waiter. So
you know this? Nick Frost like moved to Israel for 2 years. Like when he was like 19, he moved to Israel because he was sick of his surroundings and he had kind of a bad childhood and he wanted to just break free and explore the world. And he moved to Israel for 2 years. That's crazy.
And
the way he explains it, he's like, it wasn't even like a religious thing. It was a go somewhere else thing. I was like, cool.
I've known
Israel.
Fuck. I've known proportionately far too many people who have actually done stuff like that. Guys moved to Thailand. One guy I know moved to Uzbekistan just cause,
Uzbekistan. That's committing.
That's committing to
world travel.
And I mean, it's one thing to backpack. It's another thing to like live and, you know, something these kids are not likely to do, you know, these characters.
Right. Which is, you know, implied. They're very in.
That's one way of dealing with the scope system. Thing. I was talking about stakes versus scope, which I thought was a cool starting point for something we can talk about in this. But one of the things that ties this together, maybe with District 9 even, is it's not that these are worldly kids, but we're just dealing with their story. It's all these times we're talking about the scope being a little small story inside something. It's people for whom the whole world
is. This is the whole world to them. Exactly.
Yeah. It's the whole world for them.
That's exactly what good stakes are. It doesn't have to be
it means the, world
the fate
to them.
Of the world, but it means the world
it's,
to
it's
them.
It's a
exactly.
fit. And look at, and Hi-Hats is like, he's like such a low level wannabe halfway crook. But to him, he's like writing his own songs about how he's the boss of the block. And to him, he's really the
block. He is the crime lord of the block.
Exactly.
So.
And it's like, and for what? For
go run your little moon
for, you know, for maybe 10 grand worth of weed. Like that's, you know, that small stake, son. But like, but for these kids, it's like their instinct to defend everybody. It's everybody in the block. And that's sort of what like gets unified in the end is that everybody in the block means everybody in the block. It doesn't just mean the people you know. It's getting out there and forcing yourself to be a part of the community that you're in.
And that's reflected a bit when they're kind of taken aback when they realize that she's also from the block.
That's
what I'm
saying. She's like, oh shit, you're from here? Sorry, we weren't trying to do like a crime against territory. And she's like, the fuck are you talking about?
It's that line in the end. It's like, no, they're my neighbors. It's like, no, I do know them. You know, it's like I live here with them.
Yeah.
And plus, it's like why you don't date your coworkers. It's like, oh, sorry, I didn't. You know, you're gonna see him every day. You don't, you know,
broke the code.
Yeah. I'm particularly happy that they did so much practical work, just because then they get to play with it as much as they do, and it really feels, you know, we'll need one of these,
but it's got to be really good.
Yeah.
How does the creature look? Mr. Stokes.
I like it. I mean, you know, they're very studiously not letting you see it very well.
Right.
Which is always a good idea.
It's probably just foam core, right? Maybe rubber?
Well, not foam core, but
not foam core. What's the
foam rubber?
Foam rubber, that's what I was thinking.
It's got a lot of heft to it, so it could have some, it could be silicone. Silicone is more the new standard. If you're only making one, yeah, sure, why not do silicone? Especially cuz it's
silicone pricey.
It's just a little more trickier to work with. And, you know, part of the thing that makes silicone better is it's heavier. It's more flesh-like.
Right.
But it's a little trickier to work with. And when you're not putting it on, I mean, silicone appliances are especially tricky because putting it on people's faces, that's why people still do foam a lot. But if you're just building a puppet,
foam you would shave down. Silicone you pour in like a mold, right?
No, foam you pour as well.
Foam rubber you pour.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
Huh. But foam, you know, foam latex, although it's been the standard and still is, you know, it doesn't sag and bounce like skin does because it's not liquid. It's not full of liquid, whereas silicone is sort of like more of a liquid suspension, you know, those kind of things. So it tends to jiggle and sag more like real flesh does. So
jiggle and sag would be a great comedy
jiggle
duo.
Jiggle and sag,
You know,
jiggle and sag.
Or either that or something you'd order for breakfast in England.
Jiggle and sag,
I'm not a jiggle and sag.
Let me tell you something about breakfast in England.
baked beans and spam.
We've got English folks. We've got all the European folks.
That was, for me, was the learning experience when I went to England for the first time, and I found out that egg, ham, baked beans, ham, spam, and egg, that literally is
That's the British breakfast. So my first day,
oh, I get it.
My first day in Portsmouth, which is a southernmost city on, you know, it's southernmost if you go straight down. There's more south if you go southeast, but if you go just straight south from London, you end up in Portsmouth. First breakfast there was a pub across the street, and they served this sandwich called the Bam. And the Bam was a thick cut whole wheat roll with sausage, bacon, an egg. And okay, great. Sold. I'm on board for one day. By day four, it was like soul poison. It was just like, oh, fuck, not another BAM. Like, can I please? I long for a croissant. I long for some fruit. Can I please? And there was just nothing else around. It was a college town. Like, there was nothing else affordable that wasn't fucking 7 pounds, you know, that to pay for. So
first time I ever went into an authentic British pub with an authentic British guy to get something to eat. I said, he said, what do you want? And I said, if I say bangers and mash, will a guy actually bring me that? He was like, yeah. Like, well, then we got to do that.
Yeah.
Because I want that experience.
Not the case with shrimp on the Barbie.
Yeah. I don't know if it was my experience, Trey, and hopefully yours was better than mine. I ordered bangers and mash at the same goddamn pub as the BAM. And they brought me the wateriest mashed potatoes I've ever had, the most undercooked peas, and the most fucking pig's blood sausage.
My bangers and mash experience was actually quite pleasant, I have to say.
Our Scotsman says, I've never had Spam. One of our guys from England's like, I have. It's like dog food.
Spam?
It's not like we don't have Spam here.
I've never had Spam.
I believe
here.
We invented Spam.
I've never had Spam.
Yes, we did, and we shipped it off to the world.
You guys just took it and ran with it. Yeah. See, we left a bunch of it after the war,
yeah,
and you guys didn't have anything else, so you kind of developed a taste for it.
I had Spam steadily, quite regularly, when I lived in Hawaii. Spam in Hawaii is extraordinarily popular. There's a very popular Hawaiian dish called musubi, and it's Spam sushi. It is a
Spam
big,
musubi,
big block of rice.
I want to try that.
Equal to a size, equal to the length and diameter of a piece of Spam, and then thickness is about 3 times the thickness of Spam. So it's this giant pad of rice, a thing of Spam wrapped in nori seaweed.
Wow.
And it's amazing. It's so good.
It sounds good.
It's actually so worried really for the kids good in this shot, because I know that they know how to ride bikes and they clearly know how to do tricks on bikes. I don't know if they've ever practiced on a street where a DP thought it would look better wet. So they're like doing jumps and shit. And I'm like, wet concrete.
With a camera.
I got to say, I'm actually very impressed with the, because, you know, English rules are a bit different in terms of stunts with underage folk,
apparently,
because there's quite a bit that's actually them. There are some obvious doubles in some of the bumps, but for especially the bike riding scenes and stuff like that, like that's a lot of that is them, and some of the bike tricks and stuff is them too. So, I think Moses was over 18. The actor who plays him, but I think all the rest of them are certainly under 18.
They hang a lantern on that too. She says, "Oh, you look older." He's like, "Thanks."
Yeah.
By the way, I want to throw a high five to the DP. Like, for, what was it, $13 million?
Yeah.
Like, you didn't have money to work with. They had to throw a lot of that to effects, and not to mention also making a movie. The DP did a lot with very little.
Yeah.
It's a good-looking movie.
A lot of...
Or maybe the DI guy. I don't
very
know.
Minimal lighting, and very efficient lighting.
Yeah, but you can see, like, a lot of the color and stuff is definitely in the lighting.
Yeah,
it's
yeah
not,
absolutely. Yeah, yeah. But high five, bro. Good-looking movie. Also, maybe it's just because I like Bocas so much. We'll talk about Bocas when we talk about Mission Impossible 4. My God.
But again, the movie doing the unusual thing. First thing that happens with the dog gets killed.
Yeah. Dead dog.
And also, I like.
They do everything but kill a baby at the beginning.
Yeah.
The
realistic reaction is there's aliens coming down. Let's go kill them. And then they're like, oh my God, no.
Wait, these are 3 times as big as that other one.
Yeah.
Have teeth.
I love this reveal.
Here we go. Yeah. It's a great one.
And exactly. That's so great.
Yeah. Great trick.
And it does so much with so little. And like later on when they talk about a great way to hide it is just talk about how black it is.
Well, yeah. That's what I'm saying. That's the most genius idea. It's like, it's so black. It has no detail.
It doesn't expose.
As a creature effects guy, I'm like, why didn't we ever think of that?
It's a shadow. It's like, a black mat.
You can only,
and
you know, it's like you just build the thing as best you can. And then you in post, you just take the blacks. Completely the black.
Crush them the fuck out of it.
And I was like, that's genius.
And my favorite line that one of the kids has, like, that's blacker than my Uncle Femi. Like,
yeah. If you were just searching for a word to describe the blackness, none more black.
I had a decent time with the dialogue and the accents, partially because one of my favorite MCs is Dizzy Rascal. And if you ever get a chance to listen to Dizzy Rascal's music, and if you just like look at his, like, the lyrics just written down, it's just reading it, you're like, huh? But then, you know, in context being everything, You see that a lot of his imagery, it does, there is sort of like a pattern and a method to it. It just takes a minute to kind of get used to.
By the way, we were talking about it a little bit in Looper with the refrigerator, but there's a lot of the color corrected lens flare look going on in this movie where they'll take what was initially like a very bright blue lens flare, like what it would be. And then they take a lot of the brightness out of the flare. So you're just left with this sort of almost subtractive pigmentation in the shape of a lens flare that I still think looks cool. If two more movies do it, I'll be sick of it. But I still think it looks cool. You'll see it a few times. It's like it looks like an anamorphic flare, except it's just a blue streak on the footage. That's all.
Also worth noting, the British version of the Miranda rights, whereas our Miranda rights are designed to protect and to say, you don't have to say anything. There's this. It's like, you want to start speaking now because everything's going to be evidence and it's in your best interest to say it. Like the Miranda, I forget what they're called. They're obviously not Miranda rights, but they're in England. It's referred to as something.
That's your ass, mate.
And it's designed to benefit the prosecution. It's designed to encourage that. They can't force you to speak, but it's more of a reminder that you should.
I like the way that slang travels, where apparently, you know, according to this movie anyway, even British ghetto kids call the police the 5-0, which is like five steps removed from where that comes from.
Well, and there's that line later on. It's like with the FBI, it's like they're not going to call the FBI, mate. We're British. It's like MI5 or something, or Section 6.
That's right, yeah.
But again, we talked about
Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy.
We just did an episode of Documentality, and we talk about how the impact of Western culture, how it gets exported, and how it affects the youth everywhere, and not only in demeanor but in behavior. And it's like a lot of there's a great feedback loop, because European dance music ultimately became the foundation for hip hop, and then as hip hop evolved, it became its own thing and gets re-exported back to Europe and England. And it became this, I remember in the...
We're playing ping pong with culture.
Exactly. And I remember in the mid-90s, there was this big thing where it's like, all American hip-hop producers want to be European DJs. All European DJs want to be hip-hop producers. Like, and it becomes this weird back and forth.
Same with EDM.
Yeah.
And industrial. Well, Eastern Europe.
By EDM. Well, I mean, Kraftwerk and African Bambaataa's beats are essentially the same. You know what I mean? How those seeds get planted and how they get flourished, and then they come back around. And now, who are the biggest pop producers these days? These Norwegian producers like David Guetta and Avicii and guys like that. And it's just a great example of how these kids are uniquely British and still very much influenced by, you know, again, as somebody else said, like, a ghetto is a ghetto. You know, I mean, it doesn't matter where you're from. It's still, it's interesting to see how these similar threads get expressed in so many different ways.
This is when I started throwing Home Alone into the mix of movies. This is kind of like,
yeah,
I kind of like the idea of using a giant mortar shell fireworks fountain as a weapon. Like, okay, well, this, you know, this like $60 thing that you buy at the scary fireworks shop off the highway, this might be a uniquely Midwest thing. I don't think this happens in California, but you can, there's like fireworks shops that pop up and you can buy some seriously destructive shit.
Oh yeah. They pop up. They're not supposed to, but they're not supposed to.
But in like here. I grew up like my these years, like when I was basically up until about as old as these kids are, for about 5 years, I lived in an unincorporated part of Arkansas. 4th of July there is a party.
Oh yeah.
We would have all our friends from like 100-mile radius come to our house. They'd all throw in $100. We'd go and drop like $2,000 at the local fireworks shop to us, because they could sell shit you can't buy in Mexico. Like, they would sell this fucked up, crazy, amazing fireworks stuff that I think you have to have like a Disney license to actually operate. And it was so cool and destructive and powerful. And then to seeing this, and they throw the giant, because that roll, that's like what we'd open a night with, like those sort of things. And to see like the idea, like, oh yeah, light that thing and throw it under a car. Yep, that would do some damage and scare the shit out of someone. It's just it's like a cool idea. It's also reminding me now that I'm pretty sure that I'm not making up this memory. I'm pretty sure I burned down a field opposite our house once.
Two things really quickly. One, we passed it, but I really was a fan of how normally when, you know, the creature strikes, there's very similar beats and rhythms to it. With this, I love how once you see them, you see blood before you see them. Like, they're already there. They're already in frame. And there's already – those cops just fucking die just very quickly. Just boom, they're out of there. I liked how quickly they hit, too, in terms of damage from fireworks fatigue. If you go to SeanBaby.com and go digging through some of his past photos enough, you'll see
– he looked like action figures on fire and stuff.
You'll see from – 2004, when he and I took a 3-foot-tall stuffed bunny that was his girlfriend's at the time, we filled it with, because in San Francisco, across the bay, you can buy fireworks.
You can get some shit in San Diego.
We cut open into it and stuffed the entire thing with fireworks.
Like a pinata of explode.
took it down. And the thing was, it had a giant thick cardboard tube to hold it up as a spine.
Yeah.
And we realized you could stuff stuff in there. And at one point, Sean's roommate said, are we actually making a pipe bomb? Like, I'm not, like, is this what we're actually doing? We ignited that thing in an abandoned BART tunnel.
Allegedly.
Oh my God.
And, as we were driving away, we passed about 3 fire trucks. And looking back, we saw the giant plume of smoke that created this thing. And I'm like, we might get like arrested for
this
terrorism.
Might be
at this
bad.
Point.
Allegedly.
So yeah, allegedly. That's a great fictional story I just told.
You're welcome.
Didn't actually happen though.
Now no. I feel all the horror for everyone at once in this scene. I feel the horror of the kids like, oh Christ, look what I just did. I feel the horror of him like, oh Christ, look what just happened.
And the kids go also going, oh Christ, there's monsters
and then I stop. But then I do the second layer. Like after they both understand what just happened, then there's the second layer of both sides of oh Christ, which is, oh, so you just fucked up the like lead gangbanger's badass car that he just barely was able to afford selling weed for 5 years.
Right.
That is probably his pride and joy. So he's probably going to be like next level pissed at you right
That's
now.
That's true. It's like there's
monsters.
There's the trope where, you know, the drug dealer's car is like, but again, as we say, he's such a little tin pot dictator You're probably right.
This it's
is
like
probably,
a lease. Like,
he probably, exactly.
He's like, I got payments on this, bruv.
Yeah.
And this is what I mean when the film kind of has something to say, because, you know, it's like everybody's operating out of such fear. It sort of becomes, you know, there's always the cliche trope of humans are the real monsters. But what this is doing with that sort of message is saying, like, the monster is really, you don't, you know, there's empathy for all these monsters, even the aliens. They just want to get to the female. Like, that's all it is. Like, they're just operating on survival in the best ways that they all know how. And because of that, everybody has sympathy and empathy with it. And it's what separates it from, it just gives it that slight elevation over other sort of B movies. It certainly has way more pathos already than Pacific Rim. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like that's because of that. Because
my brother died. Why do you bring that up? I'm just saying.
He's just dead, you know.
Just mentioning. Anyway, let's go. Come on.
It's really sad.
It's really sad. And, you know, so sometimes I'd stare off into the distance a little bit, you know.
Meanwhile, empty the clip. Yeah, cancel the apocalypse. Catchphrase.
God, I hate We Are Canceling the Apocalypse. I hadn't actually thought about how much I hate it, but I really dislike it. Just as an everything about it, I hate it. I had made a tweet where I had said,
canceling the apocalypse.
No, tonight we are renewing the apocalypse for 6 episodes and hopefully it finds its audience. Otherwise, it's canceled.
Good one.
Tonight we are burning off the rest of the episodes of the apocalypse on Hulu.
Tonight, we are running out the clock. We are not canceling the apocalypse, but we're putting it at 2 a.m. on Sundays.
We're putting it on hiatus. We're bringing it back after the American Idol. So
tonight, we are putting the apocalypse into reruns. Next season, the apocalypse will have a better lead-in.
We are changing showrunners and recasting on the apocalypse.
I love us.
No one listening to this.
Mike
does.
Took no part in that.
Yeah, Mike sat out, and that was probably a wise choice.
I don't want blood on my hands.
One of the things that
that'll be crazy.
I always admire a movie that, and it's something that we're all low budget filmmakers, and something we always try and do. And it's like you can sort of see the reverse sensibility of this movie. It's like, let's say we got $12 million. Okay, we can probably afford one good police van prop.
Yeah.
So let's use that for about 3 of our action beats before it's completely destroyed.
Yeah, exactly.
And so they get this massive mileage out of, you know, these set pieces that are actually very small. They got a garage. It's a garage and one van and one car. We've already been in this garage for 5 minutes.
Nice.
We already got 5 minutes out of the van already.
I remember being impressed by that yesterday when Hi-Hat sees a bear attack happening. You would think the joke would be he's actually kind of a pissy little, and he runs away. The first thing that happens is he starts walking towards the fire.
Oh, no,
I gotta give Hi-Hat some props for that.
He's a legitimate badass.
The shot, the foot shot and the reveal that there's nothing there. I love this also reminds me a little bit of Pitch Black in its smallness and its sensibilities.
Yeah.
But there's a Pitch Black-ish moment where he comes walking around and, you know, there's nothing on the ground and you expect that. But if you're looking into the background in the open garage, you can see the glowing bokeh of the teeth.
I don't think I even noticed that.
In back. It's very, very subtle, but it's there. And it's something I only noticed rewatching
it. I like that also that, you know, this story doesn't take place in a vacuum because it gets just referenced 28 days later.
Yeah, no. Not only that, but I love this line. I'm shitting myself, but this is sick, which is yeah. the completely appropriate response to have.
Like, you're 15.
Yeah, you're 15 in that shit. Yeah. This, no, yeah, exactly.
You're
saying.
Invincible.
Like, these kids are able. The only reason these kids are kind of able to cope with any of this is because, in a weird way,
there's a part of them that thinks it's awesome.
And there's yeah. there's that moment when you're 14, 15, and you have a sense of scope and wonder of what the world could be. You know what I mean? And like, and there's that magical moment where you're like, yeah, aliens could totally come down, and yeah, it's up to me to fight them off.
Kick their ass.
I've seen Red Dawn. I know how this works.
It doesn't even Red Dawn doesn't even have to be aliens. Yeah. I mean, yeah. it's happening. You see it happening in all over any country in the world that collapses, and suddenly like the 15-year-olds get to carry AK-47s
and they have a necklace of earrings
and run traffic. Yeah. Stop traffic and stuff. That is, as I think it was PJ O'Rourke said, your society is in serious trouble when the 15-year-old's dreams are coming true.
Right.
Where it's like you get to, you know, carry automatic weapons and impress girls in your neighborhood.
Yeah,
That's not a good sign of what's going on in your society. Whether there's monsters involved or if it's just, your government's having some trouble.
There's enough videos on Vice to see if, like, third yeah. world fucking countries with kids with necklaces made of ears.
Yeah. There we go. Get a guy in a suit. That's yeah. right, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
Dude in a fucking black fur suit.
When I was casting my
yes.
when I was casting my pilot that came oh so close to selling and never did, we met with a couple stuntmen, and one of the prerequisites was, can you go to a full run on all fours?
Yeah.
And for
For
the three guys yeah. who could do it, holy shit, did it look awesome. Yeah. And he was kind of giving me instructions on some of the finer points of it, and just like where to shift your weight and where to put your feet and he's like, it's basically like a giant doing a bunch of like mini power squats in a crouch yeah. position, and then to just push off, and you're kind of like making a small jump. And I always thought that he'd want to land on his hands with the palms of his hands, but he's actually landing kind of on the fingers and using that as like, and it's a very tricky thing, but he did like a couple laps in our building as we're, during the casting session. And I'm like, fucking A. And it's like just that 30 seconds of watching him. It was almost like a Mutual of Omaha Wild Kingdom, where it's like the human, when he runs on yeah. all fours,
the human
does
all
this,
fours.
But it did make such a good thing. And like, and especially in a suit like this, where, and the way it's shot, cause there are ways to like say, oh, that's clearly a guy, but like just the little bits of it you see, it's sold just enough to be like, oh, that is sort of otherworldly and not, yeah. Not how a human would locomote.
Yeah. And also the way that they're, the way that it's built so that it's not just a human crouched over, like it's built so you feel the curve of the back and the spine yeah. is a bit different, and the head's down in front.
Yeah.
The head is redacted. But yeah,
ooh, right,
some really
door.
Great stuff.
Ouch, didn't see that coming.
And I mean, the interesting thing is it's a good combination of having that and then a lot of the jaws were replaced. They had uh-huh. really good stuff. Like if you see the behind the scenes and you see the before and after,
yeah.
what was there is really cool. They certainly got more personality out of the digital jaws. But they also replaced the outlines of them because the
silhouettes are just different.
The silhouettes were too kind of soft and fuzzy, and he wanted the really spiky look. So in a lot of cases, I mean, it's easier to integrate because it's just black. It's pulled down and crushed to just black, but it's still a lot of work in pretty much all the creature shots.
And forensically, like one thing, it's one of those things. I'm not exactly sure if the horse led the cart on this one or vice versa, but because of the placement on the mouth, whenever they attack, most of the attacks are to the face and to the neck,
mm-hmm.
with the exception of that like leg attack, which is obviously because it's through the throat. But just because once the beast has its prey down, that's where its mouth is going to be, like yeah. on the mouth of of the guy. So, and there was that great effect shot at the very end with hi-hats where like half of his just mouth face skin is gone.
Yeah.
And it's like, and it just, it allowed for, again, I don't know if it was like, that was the goal. So where do we put the mouth, or the mouth is here? So where would it be? I'm not exactly sure about the thought process behind that, but it's a consistent thought process.
It's also interesting because I can't think of another thing off the top of my head where the dynamic for the creatures isn't they're aliens from space. It's they're wild animals from space. Like, space is the plains.
Right.
They're just wild animals in space.
And the mighty Tatanka
and
shall
they just chased the
free.
Chick here.
Yeah.
That's it. Like, they might be doing this in like the Oort cloud or something.
So a galactic pussy hunt
which
is
again is another...
Galactic pussy hunt?
Yeah, really.
It's a ska band.
Another...
We are galactic pussy hunt. Good night.
They're playing at the canyons in Simi Valley.
It's another fun, you know, thing. It's like, they're not here to conquer our planet. It's like, we accidentally got in the middle of, like, the space grunion run.
It's just trying to fuck that one. That's all.
You know, it's like, oh, man. It's like... Dude, the locusts don't care about you, but it's just time for the locusts. Yeah. That's just how it is.
Galactic
Pussy Hunt.
I love it.
We are Galactic Pussy. Well, we used to be Galactic Pussy Hunt, but then we broke up, and then we became the Knights of Galactic. Then Nigel started his own Galactic Pussy Hunt, and we had to sue him to get the title back. And now we are the original Galactic Pussy Hunt. Hello,
anyway,
Cleveland.
Here's our one song.
Yeah, you remember this hit we had?
That's
Galactic Pussy Hunters.
Oh,
the one thing about
Hello
the-
Magic Mountain. We are Galactic Pussy Hunters.
It just like cut to one horrified mom,
yeah,
holding her hands over one horrified kid and one, no one else,
and one like 70-year-old gray haired dude going yeah
with a shirt,
with his original
yeah GPH
tattooed on his arm.
I kept waiting for something to happen with just because of the genre and tropes and stuff. I'm like, okay, in a movie like this, if you are bitten by a monster, something terrible will happen to you as a result of that bite. No, it was just a bad animal bite.
Just barely.
Didn't go anywhere with it. Oh, he's like poisonous. I can't. It's from space. How can it be poisonous to you?
No, it's just it can chew you.
He's not going to turn into one of those things.
You're cut. you got a bad laceration. That's what happened.
You got a bad thing, and it's going to make you limp, and that is not good.
Have any of you guys ever had a bad animal bite?
I have not.
Eddie? Somehow I imagine you've been like in a fight with a boar or something.
No, I had a
I shot a BB gun at an alligator once, but
I had a
really severe
and a vulture, but
the most adorable little group of kittens you ever saw in your life.
You have a long way to go on this story.
Yeah, it
turned out to be feral. They were on my front porch in Berkeley when I came home.
And they make no
Berkeley.
Sound when you stab them in the air. It's so
the
weird.
Thing. It's like there were this little group of kittens. I swear to God,
meow,
home in my fucking front porch. They're all piled up in a little kitten pile by my door, and I was like, oh, and I put my hand in. It was like I put my hand in a goddamn blender. I was like, yeah, they all just went to town on my hand.
You're going to be named Vitamix and you're Blendtec.
They were completely feral and they just went ape shit on my hand.
Did you get a tetanus shot right after?
I didn't. I should have because my hand swelled up like a freaking baseball glove. That wasn't the laceration that was so bad, but there was some...
Just the cuts.
There was some bad mojo in those claws.
You're lucky you didn't catch something.
Yeah, scratch fever, man.
All right, now let's go back to Eddie. You shot an alligator with a BB gun. Was it like, if I use both hands, it'll be over too quickly. Give me a BB gun.
Well, prior to that one, Trey and I were both the victims of a massive hornet strike while filming Return of Pink 5. It's the only time I've like
kind of a bad wound.
If you consider a hornet an animal, it's the only time I've held an animal in my hand and screamed "fuck you" at it before killing it. So
are we talking about like hornets? Like wasps?
A hornet?
Like
the hornet?
Pinching it?
The hornet?
We knew what it is.
Where's your gun?
I'm sorry, not hornet. Yellowjacket.
Yellowjacket
as well.
Oh, those things are scary.
Yellowjackets, when they sting, their stinger doesn't come out, so they can just fucking stinging you over and over again. One of them thought my back was so delicious that it actually got stuck in my shirt. So when I ripped my shirt off while I was literally running out of the screen going, fuck, 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 with Amy not far behind me.
The shirt's just bouncing against your back going, dink, dink,
I rip
dink.
It off, and then I hold up the shirt and I see the little yellow jacket just squirming there, and I held up the shirt, I went, fuck you! And I threw it on the ground and then jumped on it, cause I was eaten alive, man.
Alligator?
Moved to Florida. Outside of Orlando.
Step one.
Hop our fence, and you're 8 years old, and you have a brother you're trying to impress, and you roam into the backyard, and you end up in a swamp.
This is how, like, lots of people die.
Like you do.
Yep. And my brother, being the guy that he is.
How old is he at that point?
Dave was 12 or 13.
Okay.
Prime hell-raising age. And I'll get into another story about my brother's...
Like a luau for those alligators.
I'll get to another story about my brother's shirt in a little bit that connects it to the giant room of pot here in a little bit. But for now, and so he fired at it, and he kind of made me fire at it too, and
like,
I did.
We're talking like a 5-footer?
it was a ways away. And it didn't, I don't think we broke the skin at all. I didn't even think it fucking noticed. We could tell it was old. So it just kind of went off. Then my brother saw what he thought was a bird in a tree. And then he fired his at that. And it unfolded, like the thing in Pacific Rim, it just unfolded its wings. And it was a goddamn vulture and started flying right at us. And then we unloaded our BB guns at it as much as fast
like,
as we
you're
could.
You're like the commander in Revolutions while all the squeeters are coming out. Like,
pretty much. One of them must have hit.
I played House of the Dead. I know how awful this
that was. Like one of the handful of times in my life where like I'm afraid for my life. And we must have hit something soft on it because then it just it, like did an immediate U-turn and flew away. But that was about it.
Yeesh.
So, never been bitten though.
Hornets.
Blacker than my cousin Femi. I fucking love that line.
Fucking hornets.
Because the only Femi I think of is Femi Cootie, and that dude's black. Like, that's as black
he's
as
way
you
dim. See, but that's genius, is when you, like, just enhance the, just do a color, the color correction where you just make completely ultimate black with no detail to it. I was like, oh, it's a creature builder's dream. I was like, I just put fur on it, and that's it.
I will say, and this is not something I don't think I've ever talked publicly about. Certainly privately. For several years, my two oldest brothers, one of them who's passed away, my two oldest brothers had a decent sized grow operation, in the La Crescenta Glendale area, and their room where they grew pot was extraordinary.
I have a story to tell you. Off mic later.
Extraordinarily similar.
I thought this was going to be a Hawaii story.
To this room here. And what hit me hard.
By this room here, he means in the movie.
In the movie.
And not the room we're recording in.
Yeah, it's not the Coinga
Labs.
Just
in case anyone was curious.
It's not
NSA?
It's not the Coinga Labs because no method gets cooked here. But no, the room in the film where, you know, the Ross's pot room is what they call it. That was extraordinarily similar to my brother's garage off of Vista Court. And what struck me hard about this movie, the way Hi-Hat sort of recruits Moses, I actually saw my oldest brother have a very similar line of dialogue with a local neighborhood kid looking to recruit him as a seller.
Mm.
And so that, I don't know, again, don't know what level of research or who they talked to, but that was one note they sort of got extraordinarily right, because it was about a two-hour process of getting this kid to convince him to be like one of the local.
Well, considering
sellers.
How, I mean, I used to sell hash. I mean, come on, it's not a big deal. But
1988, La Crescenta, small town.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
hey,
it's a big deal.
Welcome to California, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
So it's
Chat room. Jimmy B's like, don't do drugs, kids.
No, don't do drugs. Don't get caught doing drugs. That's really the. Then grow out of it and, you know, get a career. It's fine. But
have some great sources on a podcast 20 years later.
That's right. But I would buy from the Grateful Dead supplier and sell hash to Sean Anah. That's my woo. Check me out. But
are you shitting me?
That statement was completely true. So whatever. This is one of those episodes my mom's going to listen to and go, really?
The amazing.
But
you were grounded 20 years ago. I'm going back in time.
Suspended sentence.
Suspended. Yeah.
What a shitty rhyme, by the way. Don't give a fuck. Blah, blah, blah. Like, that's such a shit
dude, you're not even
rhyme.
Trying. What the hell? But the point is, I'm getting at is
well, he's bad at it. That's clearly, which I love.
Me too.
Fucking proud of it. And,
anyway, all I was getting at, and I wasn't trying to shock you, is it's like, you know, I mean, everyone knows, everyone either is or is one step away from someone who's dealt drugs and has been part of the world. So there you go.
And if they got these kids from the ends, like they say, then, you know.
Yeah, they probably got stories.
Exactly.
They probably said, you know how I got talked into it was like this. Well, I'll write that down.
I've never sold drugs.
No, I've never sold either.
I was just trying to get out of that.
I've done extraordinarily little in terms of narcotics. But I do like how the one kid is always trying to mac on her. And like, he's like, you're kind of fit, you know? Like,
yes. Get off.
Like thinking like this adult grown woman is going to be impressed by a swag. Like that's.
Yeah. YOLO.
I would be kind of interested in seeing a good American remake of this, not that it's necessary, but just to see that version of, you know, to see the
like South Central or something.
The American version of this right. culture, you know, and see the interactions
there.
It's
hard to imagine it wasn't discussed.
Yeah.
And there is, I think there is room to grow it there and to kind of like, to kind of see how it takes form. I would just, it would be so dependent on the writer just not doing generic South Central, you know, just like, I would love to see it.
It needed to be written by someone from the hood.
Well, but again, here's the thing though. There's many different kinds of hoods. The South London Council State is different than Manchester.
Well, yeah, yeah. Someone from the hood he's writing about.
Someone a hood, yeah.
And I guess this particular hood works. This is the right hood for this story. You know what I mean? And I think just because like, oh, it's one tenement. You know what I mean? Like the hood of San Bernardino may or may not necessarily, or maybe it does. And it just, it's told a little bit differently. So I'd want to see it. I don't want to just see it generically in Red Hook, or I don't want to just generically see it in fucking, Compton or in Pacoima. You know what I mean? I want to see it in a very specific place where it would breed characters that tell the story the best, I guess.
Yeah.
I love how the
South
subtitles...
South Pasadena, perfect.
The subtitles go back and forth on whether or not Probs is S or Z.
Probs.
And I love this so hard. They take the gun because they think it's real, but that super soaker is filled with fucking lighter fluid. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. That's just so brilliant.
I love even the detail of saying, Naruto. Go home, watch Naruto.
It's so perfect.
Go watch Naruto. It's like, yes, that's perfect.
This is a writer who has listened to kids.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like that's, there's so many movies where it's like, it's just a 40-year-old dude, cool as ice, which I just saw. It was a 40-year-old's idea of what teenagers do.
I was so worried until the second line there, because like when the older kids are walking away, he says, like, you think water's even going to affect these things? I was so worried it was just going to cut, and it's going to be like, don't you fucking dare. Don't you fucking dare make it a water thing.
Don't you shovel on me.
But then that was just a setup for him to say, there's not actually water in there, is there? He's like, no.
No, there isn't.
No, sir. One thing, I was reminded of this during the animal thing, but then we got off of it. But last, unrelated to the last thing. There was the sort of common accepted wisdom is the animals in Australia are scary as hell. Yeah. There was a Reddit thread where someone said, Australians, are there any like animals from other continents that you're worried about? And they were like, you know, all of our scary animals are tiny, right? You guys have moose.
Yeah. They don't
moose have, are like big.
They don't have megafauna in Australia.
It's like all of the ones that kill us can be in the toilets. And then someone commented like,
yes.
But he's like,
yes, that's how is that better?
Yeah.
I'm not going to sit down and not notice a moose in my toilet.
Yeah. That's,
again, I won't be fooled again.
You can see them coming, the moose.
I wasn't actually aware because, you know, North America's kind of fucking big, fam. And I wasn't aware of
word.
Just how big moose is that the plural?
Moose. Yeah.
Moose.
How big moose are?
They are.
I like pretending it's meese, but it's moose.
It's moose.
They're not like deer. They're like the size of a car. They're like the size of a van. They're really huge.
Hitting
it's
moose.
Closer to elephant than deer.
In the northern climes, hitting moose can be often fatal.
That's the thing. It's almost all of the car accidents involving moose involve the people in the car dying and the moose walking away.
Yeah. Well, the moose doesn't, because what happens
is their body's high enough that your hood takes out their legs and their whole fucking 2-ton body mass comes in through the windshield.
Comes in your windshield, yeah.
A
deer you just kind of usually knock out of the way and your car gets damaged.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But a moose will just come in. A moose will join you in the
cabin. Hey guys!
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's bad.
Moose are scary.
And they're not as charming.
And we also have M3? We have M3, he's not a badger, but he's one of those, like, scary fucking, Wolverine, M3 the Wolverine.
Wolverine.
If you don't know what I'm talking about, Google M3 the Wolverine, you will not be disappointed.
Is he a hip hopper?
Google Badass of the Week M3 Wolverine. You will not believe it. There is a devil on Earth, and it is one Wolverine that all the scientists who know what Wolverines are talk about. One, an individual Wolverine who is that badass. Like, he scaled this mountain in like an hour shit. He's fabled.
He's the king of the Wolverines.
It's the sort of thing that you would dismiss as being like myths and people just seeing different Wolverines and attributing them to the same name. If he didn't have a fucking GPS tag on his ear.
Yeah.
But it's like, no, he just fucking climbed that mountain in like an hour.
Yeah.
It's a vertical mountain.
They're looking at the screen going, holy shit.
He's coming right at us. It's like the deep sea. It's like the passive sonar scene.
Yeah, really. I think he's gone under the boat.
We're going to need a bigger fortress.
No Wolverine can do that.
Anyway.
This one can.
Badass of the Week, Wolverine. M3.
M3 the Wolverine.
That's just his designation, and the stories of him are fucking legends.
Go track him. Look at him on Google Maps.
I want to see it. I want to see M3 fight a honey badger. I honestly don't know who would win. Well, we would lose.
Mm-hmm. There we go.
Yeah.
This is such a great reason for wearing a helmet.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
What a production reason.
Exactly.
Yeah, to make it cheaper to do this business. Like, they don't even have to make a head for him.
Yeah.
They don't have to do any of that business. They just fling it across the room and there it is. And yeah, it's totally that it raises the stakes in a really interesting way because there was nothing about this movie that said it wouldn't go there.
Yeah.
But once it does, you're like, "Oh shit.
Like,
that kid just got his fucking head torn off.
Oh, we're killing kids."
Yeah.
So
this is a kid killing movie then.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So
I like that it jumps right to this girl you expect like, "Oh no, I broke a nail." And he's like, "She's like, oh, come on, bring it. Let's do this. Let me just break this lamp and make a shock post out of it and let's go down." Come on.
Is that actually
I mean, the guys are more paralyzed.
Yeah,
than
the
she
girls
is
are like,
point.
"Oh no, oh no!"
Well, and there's that line. I think you said there's a line earlier where it's like they even said like, "Oh, well, clearly they've never met these girls." You know,
yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
And I love that gag so hard. Oh, I have a katana, folks. I have done more unintentional damage to things than I will ever do intentional damage to things.
There was an article on Crackers this week about how the katana isn't actually the end-all, be-all sword.
Dude, I nearly sliced this thumb off with a katana, and I have scars.
He's talking about his left thumb.
I have scars to prove it.
Is that the one that goes? That's the one that goes under the right hand, if you're right handed.
Yes, but there's a sheathing. There's a sheathing way in Iaido to do where it's this. Except I had the blade the opposite way because I am an idiot.
Hey, I learned how to do some. I'm pretty good with a balisong, which is an illegal weapon that I don't know how to use.
That's the flipping
knife.
It's a butterfly knife. Yeah.
But the entire series of things you can do with one of those flippy like knives is contingent upon the blade facing one direction and not the other.
Yeah.
Because you're bouncing the back of the blade, tang, against your hand a lot of the time to get the ricochet to bounce it. And I did it once backwards.
Yeah.
Swink. And then it's just like, that's a tendon that I barely missed.
Yeah. The Okinawan Kama, it's a karate weapon. It's just basically a sickle. And it's got a little tether at the end that you put around your wrist, and then
that'd do some damage.
Well, with kids, they it's popular in forms competitions in traditional martial arts to do huge things with the kama where they're like flipping it and they're like bouncing the wooden handle
like yo-yo tricks. And
yeah,
shit.
Off the back of their arms and their triceps and around their necks. And my cousin Tony used to do that in tournaments and win. But holy crap! Even it's not sharp, but even so, it's like that thing is just one wrong move from God knows what. You know,
I used to have a neck.
Yeah,
that's why I like to use.
And now I can't talk because I'm dead.
I won the sickle competition, and all I have to show for it is this not neck anymore.
Yeah. That's why I stick with the ice skate because it's much easier to handle.
Or a lamp with a bulb popped off.
The best use of a ice skate as a weapon in cinema history, my opinion, Castaway.
Yes,
just throwing that out.
Yeah, that's definitely pretty hardcore. Although Happy Gilmore is a close second, third. This one takes second. Castaway. I can't watch that scene. I skip that scene every time.
I recently recounted my two story on the forums, but that was pretty, I will take my story over that any time of the day.
Go into the off topic board. It's a conversation called The Table.
I mentioned this earlier, but like, I love this is where the energy saving light switch comes into as a great framing device. Great little plot device.
Yeah. Cause it gives you a pregnant pause before it gets scarier without you contriving it. It's just, no, the lights go off. That's what they do.
Yeah, like, oh,
we're
perfect.
Saving power. It's like, but of course for the scene, it's like, and now the lights, like in Titanic, that's a huge deal. They have to explain to you why the lights go off. Yeah. And this, it's like, no, they're on a timer. Oh, well, great. Couldn't someone stand by the door?
Thanks, guys.
Mike, where'd you go?
I'm over here. I'm stuck in the dumpster.
We gotta clear Mike out of the dumpster. Mike's in the dumpster. He's calling everybody. He's texting everybody.
Rob in the chat room points out that butterfly knives are dangerous as hell, and he's right. Don't play with any of these weapons.
No, do not.
Nor sell hash to Shanana.
No. No, that works out fine. They're cool.
I love the line, "Why won't someone rescue me?" Yeah, it's like they're dealing with
my favorite line so far is like he says, tell somebody, the kid goes, "This is too much madness for one text."
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's trying to explain in one text.
Although I kept wanting to yell at the kid in the dumpster, like, "Stop talking. Just shut up for 10 minutes. It'll go away."
I'm going to do some very illogical, but Republican-like fear-mongering here.
Oh, boy.
My brother sold marijuana, and now he's dead.
Ooh,
those two things are not related at all whatsoever. There's about 30 years in between those two events.
Mother Teresa helped lepers, and now she's dead.
4 out of 4 people who drink milk die.
I like his like really high walk there, and then the
foot right, foot left, yeah, foot right, foot left,
and then
he does just kind of waddle, doesn't he?
Yeah. But then when the lights come on and nobody's around, like that's scarier than the lights turning off in the first place in this place. But this is a great reversal of what you expect. That like you think he's out of the movie now. You think he's been eaten by a monster, and Bruce is about to be eaten because the elevator with the monster in it is opening.
He went to the real monster.
Yeah, but this is worse. Exactly.
Oh, for him. Poor
That's
him.
What I'm saying. Look at him playing panic. It never hammers you over the head with sort of that theme.
And then the lights go off on him too. Yeah.
But it's so self-evident that it's like it doesn't need to be acknowledged any more than the way it already does.
Well, there's also the aspect I was thinking as they in the scene where they run into the woman's flat. It's like, there's 160 places and they run into her, and it's like, it's a coincidence, but it's also thematic, and they keep running into each other, you know, Luke.
This is our little neighborhood.
It plays to the theme. It's a small fucking town.
Yeah, it's a small town. You all know each other. It shouldn't be like, and there are worse problems outside.
Right.
You shouldn't be against each other like this. You've got more in common than you have different.
It's not like episode one where the universe is this big, and so everybody keeps running into one another. It's like, it's the same building.
And that's the point of the story, whereas it was not so much in episode one.
Exactly.
It was just kind of not thought
through.
So
is the theme of this movie, there's better things to be afraid of? There's better outsiders to hate?
No, it's just
just get along?
A lot of our fear comes from unfamiliarity. And if all of us would just take a moment and introduce ourselves to the supposedly scary person who we are ultimately, I mean, and what is community? If not, it's your block, your neighborhood, your city, your country. Like, if we just take the moment to just like, Maybe it's not so bad. The second that they realize,
go ahead, you finish.
The
your
second
thought.
That they realize that the alien is just after the chick, it's like, well, okay, if we just take a second to understand each other,
but it's taking a second also to understand that a lot of your problems are solvable and are sometimes even of your own making just because you're not taking the time to understand.
This idea of a monster is a construct around simply what we just don't choose to understand or know.
I wonder if Brian was here, if he would say that this movie is endorsing just trading one tribalism for another.
I don't know
all of your own tribe, but then the rest of the tribe don't.
No, well, because again, it's part of how they deal with the monsters is coming to understand them. Now they do ultimately destroy them, which goes a little bit against the
Now that we understand them, we can destroy them.
Yeah.
That's America!
That's why it's important to understand them. That's why we do it.
But the lesson being, I would say the other lesson is if they had understood them in the first place, they wouldn't have gotten into this mess at all.
Yeah, all right. Exactly.
Question for you guys, Eddie in particular, but I think both Mike and Trey can contribute too. Mm-hmm. If you could pick out of an unlimited arsenal one melee weapon to take with you into this block, which one would you take?
Supposedly that's how this happened, is he asked a bunch of kids. As he
that's how they got like bats and all that.
Like legit melee weapon.
I love that the little kid was like, "Oh, super soaker full."
Are you talking about? Are you talking about like legit melee weapon or like just improvised whatever's around the house?
Not gun, not firearm.
But if I had my pick of anything,
any sort of thing that you can hold and attack with.
Yeah, I'm good with sticks, and I think stick and knife combo would be good. Because in the Filipino
spear?
Styles, once they penetrate that range, you're fucked.
Well, that's what we're talking about, though. I'm giving you all the things that you can hold and attack with.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I would do a combo. I would do stick and knife. I would do a stick and knife combo because the stick can parry as well as attack, and it can set up. It can be the check hand to set up the knife. Then, I mean, and we've already established that a solid knife underneath the chin is enough. So, okay, bite this stick while I stab you in the mouth. I mean, there's no great combination. A katana, a bat, the bat would probably not take them out the quickest.
Mike, would you go sword?
You know,
I'd probably go with a sword, but I probably would go with the katana because I don't need a double sided one to bounce back and hit me in the face.
Fair enough.
I love this sequence. How great production production value wise is like it's
Take
so
hall,
scary
it up.
And so tense, and you don't even have to. They don't even have to be in the hall half the time.
They should have filmed this in my bedroom, and I wouldn't know.
Yeah. They did film in your bedroom.
It's easy to shoot inserts for this sequence.
Yeah.
And I love this. If you've ever lived in the Bay Area or anywhere there's a lot of fog, this shit happens. Like, I mean, if you're in fog and you get turned around, you're like, what direction am I fucking
this
facing?
This place, when I was in Marina Del Rey, there was a section where during certain parts of the year when the weather was
like
just right.
The marine layer?
Yeah. The marine layer would literally, it was like freaking werewolf movie. It would be like three.
That thick?
It would be, completely opaque. and only 3 feet off the ground. Literally, you're walking through.
So you could, like, you're, it's at your
you
knees.
You could literally do this, and I was tempted to do it, although I would have been killed. You literally could lie down. You could have lain down on the ground.
On your back and just
and
grab
been completely invisible to pedestrians walking right up on you and just burst out of the ground like a freaking werewolf out of the fog. And
if not for the fear that someone would stab you, that would be fun.
Someone would probably have shot me, but it was like, but you literally could have done that. You could just lean down and people would have walked right past you and could not have seen you.
Trey, would you go for a sword though?
I think I would, despite Eddie's, correct pointing out that, I would probably go for a pole. I'd probably go for a long pole. I would probably try and just keep the distance and,
Know. There's an argument to be made for that. I'm just not very good with a spear. Yeah. So that's,
I'm not good with anything. So I'm going to anything that at least is an attempt to don't even get close to me is probably my best weapon. So
yeah.
So I think
that'll redirect it towards you guys.
Exactly. A pole with a pointy end on it is probably going to be my best weapon.
I think in terms of dedicated melee fighters, there's very few better examples than hoplites. And their weapon combination was spear and shield. And then once the spear range was dropped or penetrated, then they transitioned into the short sword. I think that is the best trio of weapons that humanity has ever created that didn't involve projectiles.
Nobody here said shield until just now.
Well, fuck. If shield is an option, then yeah, spear and shield.
Things that you can hold.
Where do you keep your shield? In the bathroom?
No, spear and shield, and then the shield holds the short sword right there. Boom. There turn me into Leonidas.
And the shield also is a great place to put your ammo clips for your AK-47.
Right. Well, Eddie, we're glad you said that because we're right backstage.
Let's get started. Nick Frost again, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, Nick Frost.
And I love that such a small sub, but hi-hats is totally shaking in his gun. He's...
And Ron was trying to protect him a little bit. He had a gun on him. He's like yeah, you know what? I'm not I'm not decent.
Get out.
Come back a little later.
Run. So this is one of the things that's great, the clever construction of it that's really good is that, there's more than one enemy in this movie. And there's more than one threat, and threats overlap and combine and mix and match. And you escape from one, you head right to the next one. I mean, that's...
It all in 80 minutes, by
exactly.
the way.
Exactly. It isn't just, oh my God, monster run. Oh my God, monster run. Oh my God, monster run. It's you barely get away from the monster. There's a monster outside, but there's a maniac drug dealer with a gun inside. You got to convince him. That's good.
In the chat, Zarban says, I would look for a bamboo shaft, diamond, charcoal, and phosphorus.
Okay,
and
MacGyver.
Some sort of primitive lathe.
And just do the lean over, donkey kick to the spine.
One time, Sean and I were in Vegas, and we're
oh my God, cartoon.
This
donkeys.
Is a great effect.
Cartoon
love it.
Donkeys.
Oh, I love it.
That's nasty.
One time Sean and I were in Vegas for some fights and we had seen the ad for the gun store in Las Vegas. And if you've never heard of the gun store, it is a gun range. And if you go to gun ranges anywhere in the country, you can usually rent a firearm to fire and it's always limited to a handgun. But if you go to the gun store, they actually have the ranges to handle assault rifles. So you can rent an M16, an AK-47, any gun. And that's a big part of its advertising.
I have rented a Uzi at the firing line down the road here.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
In Burbank?
Yeah.
Oh,
Uzi was fun.
Last time I was at firing line, they didn't have Uzis.
You couldn't shoot it in a full auto, but you could shoot it.
Oh, you could shoot semi-auto. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, these you could fire full auto, and the advertising was such, it was like, fire any weapon you want. And then that, of course, began the game of wild speculation of, okay, where does that naturally end? Machine gun? Or how about cybernetic attachment of a Gatling gun? And then it culminated in our inside joke of, they just put a cube in your hand and just say, think. I'm like, could they saw off my torso and put me on a robot centaur that has missiles? Like, is that part of the deal?
If you I think that early, was one of the Doom bosses.
Yeah. If you're there's a waiting list for that one, but yeah.
In Indiana, there was a place called Edmo's Ammo and Guns, which reminds me of a place in Arkansas, and I'm not making this up, off the highway. Mm-hmm. Clear fucking fields. You're just driving from Harrison, Arkansas to Springfield, Missouri. There's nothing out there.
Right.
Except for a little shack with a sign that says, Rex's Artificial Limbs.
Yeah, they do stuff.
Not a lot of curbside business, but you know.
This is freaky, by the way, when this kid finally takes off his hoodie and his knit cap. He's unrecognizable. You're like, is that that's the kid with the cap. That's what he looks
like.
That's
the kid who looks like Kenny.
Suddenly he turns into Michael Cera.
Yeah. Or I guess he's more Craig. Craig is the one with the knit cap on,
yes.
on South Park.
I guess I don't know enough about South Park.
Yeah.
Yeah, Craig? I haven't watched it in the past 12
years. He wasn't one of the main characters. He was one of the other kids at school that was kind of a dick.
Oh, that's right.
Not so that the others
were. Of course, the joke
is Mr. Biology is going to figure it out for us.
He also, the one slight contrivance in this movie is he happened to be watching an episode of Wild Kingdom or whatever where they talked about butterfly pheromones and how it attracts the male and stuff like that.
But he said that he was actually like a zoologist major or something.
He did major.
Yeah,
he was
studying biology.
The joke would be if like the joke version of the scene would include a beat where the one character who everyone knows for a fact has never been in touch with the animals at all is also covered with like UV covering like goop. Right. And he's like, what's that from? And he's like, I have to go.
Dude, what?
I get lonely.
I love this fucking haircut this dude has. It's just hair is just going in impossible directions.
Same as the aliens.
Yeah, right. They're just like us. I love that issue of us. Aliens are just like
aliens,
us.
Just like us. Well, but that's not the definition.
They spray pheromone on their killer.
That's more alien. I don't think it means what you think it means.
Exactly.
Aliens are just like us.
The thing is like
dogs are just like cats.
I wouldn't put past E or Us Weekly.
Yeah, really. Aliens so like us.
They do point out the slight inconsistency where the first time they walk in, it doesn't glow like this, so it doesn't give it away. But
Yep, this looks a lot like my brother's garage.
Did he also have like cosmic bowling?
No, they didn't do the blacklight thing. I mean, they just...
What's the blacklight? Oh, just UV, I guess.
Yeah,
it's UV. UV. It's just a slightly more in the UV range.
He had lamps, but I mean, it just, you know.
It only just occurred to me that the character Moses is like, maybe I can lead them out.
Bom, bom.
Get it? To the promised land.
Yeah.
I get it. But as contrivances go in movies,
that's pretty slick.
Yeah, the grow lights and, you know, oh, it's like UV and you're okay. All right, you know, that's pretty good. I mean, as far as like, guys, scientific breakthrough goes, I mean, you know, Outbreak is far dumber than what just happened in this movie.
Dude, you're right. He doesn't like Baby Simon Pegg.
And I do
give that little kid a goatee.
It's a nice little behavioral consistency, but like for, you know, they've established that these things are reacting strongly off of a pheromone. They have a super heightened sense of smell. When this thing gets hit with just the liquid first, it kind of like weirds out for a second.
Yeah.
Like before it gets, and it's a natural plot thing to allow time for the fire. But when you look at it, it's like, dark, 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 fuck this. Like it's just not, enjoying the smells, yo.
That was like the clearest shot of the guy in the suit we ever got was that wide shot of it being sprayed.
Like shaking it off.
Yeah, it was like, oh, nice. Nice job.
You were talking about that earlier. It reminded me. I saw a video a couple of weeks ago of a guy who has consistently gotten and was just trying to re-up the world record for 100-meter dash on all fours. He can do it in like 14 seconds. Gosh. It's the most bizarre thing
to watch. That's fast. I can do 100 meters in like on 2 feet.
I wouldn't want to do them on 2 feet.
I don't know if I could do it in 14. Maybe I could.
I was a middle distance runner in high school. I did the 400 and the 800, so I was never good on the 100-yard dash.
I probably couldn't
now,
do it under 20.
Now, there's a very interesting British thing there that's kind of lost on us Americans.
That's right.
That the police identified themselves as armed police because that is a distinction.
That is a distinction.
That needs to be made.
Yeah.
Dude, our security guards
are you just
sometimes.
Regular bullshit police? Oh, you're the kind of police with the actual guns.
Beat cops.
Oh, okay.
Beat cops only have sticks. That's why they're called bullies, because of the bully sticks.
That's right. So
all the other ones are like amputated police.
Yeah. Again, it's just something that Americans is like, the last thing the American needs to know is whether a cop is armed or not. They're armed. There's no doubt about it. Yeah. That's by definition.
I mean, people don't give it credit. It's a pretty rough culture. I mean, I don't know. Every time I was in England, I saw at least 2 fistfights just on the street.
Really?
Like at night. Yeah.
I've only ever seen one.
Not as many gun deaths, but more knives. They kill each other with knives.
A lot of knives. I mean, the film that I sort of bullied Tegan into watching that he ended up loving, 24-Hour Party People. That gives a very sort of accurate portrayal of Northern England life in terms of like. Serious shit over there is when, you know, was the illegal gun trade, because like the only person you would meet in England that has a gun is a criminal, period, because guns are not allowed by the general citizenry by and large. So
not in Sweden,
as the NRA tells us.
Yeah,
in Sweden they hand you an AK-47.
they're very
and tell you to go stand on the wall
or whatever it was. But Zap at one point was talking about that. He's like, no, they like hand those out. Like when you get your driver's license, they also give you like an AR-15. Like, okay.
Yeah, but see, the Sweden is so laid back. They're like, I don't feel like killing you. I don't want to.
dance.
We get free healthcare. It's not exciting.
Exactly. All you would do is go
you
get
just
fixed.
Go to the free hospital.
That was my
it's a waste of these bullets.
That was my impression.
Just get fixed
of,
up again.
That was my impression of reading the Girl Dragon Tattoo trilogy, because you only spend about 40% of the time about plot and murder. The rest of the time, you're understanding their financial system, their fast food options, their furniture choices.
They drink a lot of goddamn coffee
in the chat room. In the chat room, Jimmy, who I think is from Scotland, says, guns got banned here when people started shooting up schools.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
We do sort of forget that.
Dot, dot, dot.
We do sort of forget that the northern part of England and Ireland experienced terrorism for about 90 years straight. So it's understandable.
Yeah, and Zarban points out that there are more guns in the countryside than in like the cities. And
of course, yeah, no, like hunters and stuff like that. They actually
legit hunting and stuff like that.
There's legit hunting, but yeah,
I do love that Nick Frost moment. Is it safe? No.
No.
Okay, bye.
Good luck. Okay. Good luck. We're all counting on you. Yeah.
English Felicia Day. Now I can't get out of my
head.
It's
totally British Felicia Day. So. Yeah, it's like talking about scale and scope and stakes and all that. It's like I was even when the first time I saw this movie, not even thinking about Diff. I was, the show we do. thinking, it's like, wow. So the big climax is I'm gonna run through this apartment while you run through that apartment.
Yep.
In your face, Michael Bay.
Yeah. And
that's the climax. They're like, good for you, movie.
That's what I'm saying. It's just like it's damn. I know. It's just like that's what's. It should. It almost pisses me off that there aren't more movies. It pisses me off that I'm making such a big deal out of the fact that it's a comedy.
That we have to make a movie.
I know, I have to like point out that we should celebrate this very small, modestly budgeted film, guys.
I totally am. That's my
point. And we're sitting here marveling at the, look, they just didn't show something.
Yeah.
They cut around it and gave it as, implied it.
And it's, I'm pissed that it's gotten to this point.
Let's do some context building real quick. This is a action movie for people with short attention spans, full of monsters and CGI and lens flares. Okay. Now, a kid coming back from Pacific Rim to watch this would be equivalent to a kid going off of Coke for the first time in his life and just having water now.
Three M&Ms.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
It's like, not just that, but it's like you get them off the couch, you make them run around and do work, and they've just done a bunch of manual labor, and you're like, here. And they're like, fuck, water's amazing.
Yeah.
You know, it's like that. It's just fucking, ugh.
And then right in the middle of this whole little thing, this, there's this little character exchange.
And you never meet the uncle.
Yeah.
Perfect. Yeah.
Also,
perfect.
Also, this girl.
Oh. I was like, he's doing that again.
She's so cute.
And yeah, the whole thing, the big plan in the Michael Bay version is we're going to blow up the block. The plan in this version is we're going to get them in a room so I can blow up that room.
We're going to have a flash fire in my living room. That's the big finish.
Apartment 3F is destroyed.
Dude, they blew the fuck out of that apartment in that movie.
Most of the furniture in apartment 3F is singed now. Boom, baby. Boom.
They're going to have to repaint that whole building, that whole room.
Whole
window's gone, man.
It's such a cool choice to do the entire sort of like and run here in slow motion.
Oh, but yeah. Normally I hate slow motion.
Me too.
Because it's so overused, but it's such a perfect choice here because of how they use it.
Because of what it means to them.
Because of what it means to them and because of how it really helps you emphasize and kind of live in the torturous zone of how close they keep getting to him. You know,
he's jumping off their backs right now.
It's like it gives you the ability to appreciate, like, oh God, they're coming. And like you said, it puts you in the place that this is probably about how he's experiencing
it. It's not like he's looking awesome through this. He's fucking, just slamming into walls.
The longest run of his life.
Unnecessary jumps. Totally off balance.
Yeah.
He's not a trained ninja.
It's like those things are trying to eat the girl.
Yeah, they're like,
ninja doesn't happen until you're a junior year. So.
Lois! Lois! Come here, Lois! Lois!
Yeah. Come here so I can tell you I love you.
All things considered, in the best case scenario, I'm guessing it probably doesn't go too well for the females.
Right?
It's like ducks.
It's like, man, the evolutionary code really has it out for you, ladies. We're going to make you a third of the size of the guys with no natural defenses.
Yeah.
And we're going to make the guys tooth monsters.
This is like college.
Whackety schmackety doo.
We haven't done that in like 2 years.
Yeah.
Bringing it back.
when
I also love that minor beat. It's a totally minor beat. It could have been something that wasn't even in the script, that minor, but the I hate these lighters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The child safety lock lighters, like, fuck this. All right. Pop
well,
it out
the, well the lighters, and then also, and now I have to wait for the wick to burn down.
Yeah. Oops. It'll burn you. It won't burn you too bad. It'll burn you. I've done that a lot. I burned out a field.
You keep mentioning this. Like,
no, I just, every time.
True confessions.
Just explain.
Were there some orphan nuns trapped in the field or something? Yeah, like, yeah. How did you fucking.
No, but it was one of those things where it's like, oh, a fire. Oh, shit. Oh, the toes doesn't go that far. Mom? I don't know what to do about this. Was the hanging the thing out the window a part of the plan? Was that.
No, that was
just
no
luck.
Yeah.
And he's so hanging on the Union
so
Jack.
So his plan was to kill himself.
His plan was just to. Avoid being killed for maybe 10 more seconds.
While understanding and that he's
figure,
probably going
to
die.
And then figure out what to do then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's kind of...
They got blown out the window.
Yeah. So. If the room is about to explode, it's like, okay, I'm going to get out of the room and then figure out my next step.
Yeah.
Like, step one, get out of room.
Step one, don't be in the room.
Yeah.
Step two, step three, survive.
Step two, balcony. Step three, Union Jack.
Granny Magnus.
This kid without his hood, I just like, who is that kid? Where did he come from? Oh, it's that same one.
And I love just like the SWAT team just looks exactly like the monsters that kind of come through the mist. Like,
I like this movie a lot more than Super 8.
Yeah, so that, you made a really good point.
It's certainly much more cleaner and straightforward. It's trying to do something very different than Super 8.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's got the same energy that it's about kids fighting. Well, actually, this one is about kids fighting an alien. The other one is about kids and there's an alien running around.
Saving an alien.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm saying. It's like I feel more connection and empathy with these kids than I did anybody in Super 8. Like I related to these kids a hell of a lot more than I did. Anybody in Super
8. Isn't it funny how Super 8 went, you know, his mom died.
Yeah.
You sad, right?
Yeah.
You know, this movie this kid, he's a thug. He mugs people.
Yeah.
He's a hero.
And then he actually accidentally smashed the car of the lead thug.
Yeah, that's true. Mm. And then beat a wild animal to death.
He defends himself from the space gorilla, fine. Then he has to go fucking get that thing's gonna die. Like, he's gotta go. Be a man, you know, like that's, I don't know. It's
but then like we said, it's whole movie is about them reaping the consequences of having that. Yeah. That
and
the
and
one girl says it, the one girl says it on the nose one time. That's all you needed. Actions have consequences. Boom. Mm-hmm. Theme done. You know,
did the 80s not hit England for like 20 years?
They didn't. I'll tell you this. 80s movies.
Or are we back to the 80s?
Basically, British 80s movies were like our 70s movies because
this is like the Goonies downtown is what they're doing here.
They didn't get that sort of wave of sort of instant nostalgia films that we sort of did in the 80s. Like they didn't get that. They didn't get a lot of those types of films in the early 80s. Like they were still in these heavily dark dramas. Like we kind of flushed the 70s out of our system because of Star Wars. They still their own. Native movies sort of kind of proliferated like that through the 80s. Then they got into the really like dark comedy and you know that was prompted a lot off of TV.
Well, there was
that.
The you know the failing empire. They, you
yeah,
know,
the
there empire. Was the troubles in Northern Ireland were at their worst in the 70s and 80s.
Yeah,
you know they were a nation under siege and you know falling apart at the seams everywhere you looked.
One nation,
labor
under siege,
and then Thatcher for fuck's sake. So
exactly. Well, to be fair, they had a really shitty labor party that led into that allowed Thatcher to happen, and then Thatcher happened,
so it was a rough time. So
yeah.
They were having their 70s and the 80s.
Yeah, exactly.
And 90s.
He looks kind of like Denzel in that shot.
He totally looks like Denzel.
The tucked lip thing going on.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we were saying that earlier. He's going to be...
Look like...
I just watched that scene from Flight the other day, just that one scene, and goddamn that fucking scene.
Which scene?
The scene with the plane.
From
Flight.
From Flight. Oh, yeah. The scene. The just, reason to watch
yeah,
the movie.
Just the scene, yeah. Okay, so
I like how you say that like it's spoiler, like that's not like, what everybody.
Like it's totally a plane crash in Flight.
Most of the trailer, yeah,
yeah. That scene, it's like an 8-minute chunk, and just goddamn that fucking scene. Anyway, so Joe Cornish,
keep it coming.
Solid love, bruv.
What else is Joe Cornish on?
He's a co-writer. Yeah, he's directing the adaptation of Snow Crash.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's his only other. This is the only film he's ever directed. He wrote and directed some TV. He wrote, all the stuff he's co-written has been with Edgar Wright. So he's been Edgar Wright's like main co-writer up until now.
Oh, so it's Probs with an S in the actual credits.
Yeah.
Oh, weird. Anyway, like I said, this movie
official.
Is...
official. Canon.
This movie gets in and gets out, but it doesn't do anything wrong. And it's a
gets
lot of
done,
fun to
man.
Watch. And fucking high five. Like, I don't know what more to ask out of a movie than exactly what this movie delivers fast and very well. And fucking... When someone comes out the gate this strong now, I'm more sort of reserved about it than I would have been even just recently. Because... Blomkamp, but go Dean Egg, and I think the all the critter stuff was actually a different shop, but I'm not
positive. It was a place called Fido.
Fido, that's yeah. right. Mm. High five, Fido. And
or no, I don't know if it was all of it, but they got some. Like Dean Egg was like, "Dude, we got like, oh, Nina Gold is she does everything." I haven't even.
you sound disappointed.
Only one casting director in all of it.
No, I watched. I rewatched like the opening credits of Game of Thrones just because I need it, and
it was because of that video of the castle, right?
She's yeah. a great yeah. casting director,
and I think I saw her name in those credits, and then
yeah,
I
see,
went
Terry
to,
Notary. I was gonna say it's yeah. always Terry Notary,
and then I went to the World's End, and her name was in those credits, and they're in these credits. I'm like, oh my god, she like
she's
I never
it.
Noticed before.
She's the
but,
one.
prophecy has spoken.
Yeah.
That when Nina Gold goes back to the '50s to save her parents,
yeah.
the world will be saved.
There actually is a really good. Documentary running on HBO right now
called
Casting By or whatever
yeah.
it's called.
Yeah, it's
really,
on HBO Go as well.
Really, really that's quite good.
Probably about her. I'm probably
well, it's about American casting.
Yeah,
honest,
but
it's really
really,
great
it's really good.
No
breaking down the, really good at breaking down the process.
Anyway, but fucking high five, Joe Cornish. I await with bated breath your next thing. If indeed your next thing is Snow Crash, dude, you are on thin ice with me now. Like,
yeah.
how much I loved you after this, that's only barely enough for me not to be running screaming from your Snow Crash thing. So please don't let me down. It's an impossible movie, and I'll give you all the benefit of the doubt in the world, but that's my shit.
Don't screw it up, Cornish.
Don't screw it up, man. But seriously, fucking great job with Attack the Block. High five, bro. Eddie?
I mean, I'm trying to think of I remember in music somebody was saying, like, in terms of, like, the best first album from a band was The Replacements. Or not The Replacements. It was Replacements' first album. And it's like, I'm trying to think of, like, a better first movie I'm not saying it's the best first movie of all time. I'm just saying, like, if you're a first time director and you're making your first movie, I can't imagine a better outcome than something
was
like
Memento
this.
Christopher Nolan's first movie?
No. He made a movie called Following.
Following.
I mean, yeah, Citizen Kane, you could say that, obviously, but like, yeah. But I mean,
best movie is Citizen Kane. Attack the Block.
But no, I mean, it's like, I mean, nowadays, if you, this is the
coming
best,
out with this strong of a sensibility.
I think this is the best you could possibly hope for. Like, this is just, this is the gold standard of, I've got a small, low budget genre film I want to make. Boom.
You wouldn't know that this is
no.
the work of a first time feature director.
Yeah, and again,
you'd have no idea.
Last night, Drew McWeeny went on a very justified Twitter rant about a found footage movie he just found. And it was, the movie was Nazi scientists or Nazi soldiers discover Frankenstein's lab and then fight Frankenstein's monster.
I saw the trailer for that.
And it's a found footage movie. And it's like, why are we now in the age where independent filmmakers are running towards their low budget? And embrace, it's like, oh, it's a low budget, so it's got to be a found footage movie. I can't make my movie any other way. And it's like, fuck you. No, like you like the size of your budget should never be apparent to me. And it's like and just like you looked at this movie and went, oh, 40 million and had to be surprised by 13 million. That should be the goal.
Right.
For
right.
everybody.
Absolutely.
It shouldn't be paranormal activity works because that story needs that format. But we don't need to make we don't need to make Apollo 18 every single time because your budget is small. You know, because you're going to get Apollo 18s. This is a guy who had a budget and worked like straining against the confines of it, just like the original Star Wars did. It strained against the confines of its own budget, and there's an energy to it as such. And I don't think you could.
It's had the budget of the original Star Wars.
Exactly. And that's what I'm saying. It's like, and I'm saying like this, this is like the gold standard for that, for maximizing every dollar, making choices that take advantage of that.
Michael.
Yeah, I really don't think I have anything to add to that.
You're
or
not going
already.
To attack the block?
Say, no, it's yeah. it's a
attack the block.
Very solid movie, like you said. It's really impressive for a first. This is a director who's like just knows. Yeah. He's like, and yeah. it you know, it's
the,
like
the
a,
word that critics use is assured.
Yeah,
an assured debut
or confident.
Yes.
Yeah,
deft.
And I didn't really care that much for. Snow Crash, so fucking go for it.
I will kill you.
But
do whatever.
Yeah. I'm actually, because I didn't care that much for the book Snow Crash. I'm kind of like, really? Now I have to see the Snow Crash because Joe Cornish is making it. But yeah, I like Joe Cornish. I want to see what else he's got.
Trey?
Yeah, ditto. It's not. It's one of those movies that doesn't necessarily make for a great episode of What Are You Doing movie, because this movie knows what it's doing.
Yeah. Yeah,
and it's seriously. It's obvious what it's doing, and it does it really well, and it's clear, and it gets it done. And what's weird is that that's remarkable.
Yeah.
That's the sad part.
It just occurred to me there's another point of comparison movie for this might be James Gunn's Slither. It's a similar kind of like little bitty movie, but it's sort of like an 80s-ish B-movie. It's just a little fun thing, and you forgot it happened. But it was a fun movie. Go back and watch it, sort of movie. Also a fun episode. Also a lot like this, where
which gives me whole
time
like,
we have
know,
to talk
I,
about Eddie shooting
know,
alligators.
I just know like three things about Guardians of the Galaxy, but one is that there's a fucking talking raccoon.
Rocky raccoon, yo.
And there's a talking tree that's going to be played by Vin Diesel. Mm-hmm. But James Gunn is making it. That's the third thing I know about it.
Which, so it's like, okay.
Which makes me go, all right. I will give that the benefit of the doubt. I'll see what happens.
That makes the other things interesting.
Yeah,
Okay.
Well, back whenever it was like Guardians of the Galaxy, what's that? And then they announced James Gunn. Those of us who had like are familiar with Guardians were like, that's perfect. That's so perfect.
Yeah.
Because my fear was that they were going to do the inverse, that they were going to get a Michael Bay or somebody like that to make it into something that doesn't understand the sensibility of it.
So
M. Night Shyamalan's.
Yeah, M. Night Shyamalan's Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, because went so well with Avatar The Last Airbender.
Yeah, woo. So this is a movie that, you know, this is a movie that literally, you know, kids who want to get into the movie business, you shouldn't watch The Dark Knight. You should watch this.
Yep.
Because this is the movie you should start out by making. Then, you know.
And boy howdy, if you can.
Yeah.
I mean, watch Back to the Future first, but.
Yeah, watch Back to the Future. Yeah, exactly. But again, it's worth saying. Back to the Future is a medium budget movie by a guy who had like a couple of good movies that did okay.
Starring a TV star.
Yeah. And, you know, starring kid from TV. There was no great hopes for it. And it's a small movie. It's actually a very small movie.
And it's weird as hell if you think about it. Yeah. It doesn't seem that way now, but
he almost fucked his mom.
Making out with his mom in the car.
Yeah. It's a little twisted, that movie. And, you know, but it's sort of caught on as a cult thing.
Before
which is nice.
Their manservant almost rapes her.
Yeah. It's weird. It's crazy.
Anyway.
But yeah, I mean, you know, it's small movies, man.
Small movies,
Ellie.
Small movies. Small moves. Contact. Anyway, this has been What Are You Doing Movie. Go to friendsinyourhead.com. Go to the forum. Subscribe. There's a wonderful conversation. Great community of people growing every week. Please go join it. It's awesome. Find us at twitter.com/friendsinyourhead, facebook.com/friendsinyourhead, and friendsinyourhead@gmail.com. iTunes. Subscribe. There's a brand new episode every single week. And buy one of our shirts or other things. We've got random shit. We've got robes because fucking who cares? Buy one. And if you don't want to buy anything, but you do want to support the show, we're not asking, we're just saying, but there's a PayPal button. You can give us money with it. Anyway, Holden Hill Design became the website. Until next time, my name is Teague Christie.
Eddie Doody.
My staff.
Chase Dukes.
And this has been What Is Joe Cornish Doing?
Good night, allow good night. It.
Movie.
Allow it. Yeah. Oh, good night, good night.
Mars attacks.
Fuck the blitz and blood and hit with the hits and ammo. Seriously, look up Jesse Rascal. It's Attack the Block, the music.
Attack the Block, the music.
Friendsinyourhead.com.